everybody, to the Spawn of Me podcast. This is your host, Khalif Adams. I am here chilling for episode 211 with the two dopest cats in the world. We have the Duchess of Diversity, the one, the only, Tanya DePass. How are you doing, Tanya?
I'm here. I made it back from Seattle. I didn't get stuck there despite the weather's best intentions.
Yeah, you just because you had, like, the weather was trying to mess with you all week.
Right.
It was like, nah, you can't roll through. You're delayed. There's, like, all these things happening.
Right, like,
it was not exciting.
Getting out there was cool, but I got a message about my 3 o'clock flight at, like, 8 in the morning.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was like, what? You're delayed. And actually, my friend I was staying with got the message before I did. Because she messaged me. She was like, do you know your flight's delayed? And I was like, what?
Oh, no, that's not dope at all. No. Not cool. Hey. Not cool at all. We are also joined with this week and every week with my man, my mellow, the smooth kind of fellow. It is Sharif Jacksington of the Sharif Jackson of the Jackson Sharif. How are you, sir?
I'm doing good, man. Is it Jackson of the Sharif or the dot Sharif or the Jack? I actually heard somebody actually got a message asking if I planned out what I was going to say or if I said it randomly. Guess what, y'all? I'm a random person. I definitely randomize it, just like I randomize our Spawn on Me After Dark intros.
Which are really good.
Which you will know really if you good. Are a premium subscriber. But yeah.
I like the way he says premium subscriber when he does. He's like, premium subscriber.
And Sharif even has like the nice ambient glow going on tonight.
Yo, I got the glow. Yo, after 2 hours of algebra, like, you get that glow. You know what I'm saying? So
I don't know. That's
I got that post algebra glow.
Oh shit.
Is that like the post alpo glow?
I have never had the post algebra glow. Wish I had that at least once.
That's because you ain't have a teacher like me, dog.
That's true. I kind of want you to teach me math, but you'd probably be really mad at me at some point. You'd be like, get the fuck out of here.
Nah, you'd be like, you just have to stay dumb. Bye.
Wow. Wow.
Oh, that's great. Just like, I'm leaving. I can't deal with this. You're unteachable.
Stay dumb.
Stay dumb. Hashtag stay dumb.
That is amazing.
Oh, my God. Cicero is not with us this week. He's working for the man, working for the weekend, when it's not the weekend because it's Thursday. So he will be back hopefully next week. And if you want to come check out our stuff, check us out on Twitter at Spawn on Me. Check out our Facebook page. And please go to patreon.com/SpawnOnMe if you'd like to support us with your dollars and get some of that good premium content that we have for you. We had a dope, dope show with Eljoy Williams this past week, who is the president of the NAACP Brooklyn chapter. We talked a lot about civic engagement. We talked a lot about where do you get your political leanings from? In our political show, on the political show, the Chicago Beltway, which was really funky. And then Spawn on Me So Mad, we had a lot of conversations about the Black Panther, which was which was really dope as well. So Reef and C held that down on that end. But we're going to talk about video games because that's what we do here with hashtag Stay Dumb episode 211. Wow. I think I may have to call this episode hashtag Stay Dumb.
Stay Dumb.
Wow.
That was so good. Anyway. We have a lot of stuff to talk about because there's a lot of news in the world this week. We have so much stuff to get through. Two series, two games that we did not know if they were going to make a comeback are actually coming back. We have the dopeness that is the Division 2 that got spread out there from Ubisoft. Ubisoft was like, yo, we got this coming. And also Call of Duty Black Ops 4, which has caused a stir amongst all people on the internet because they don't know how to use Roman numerals correctly. Black Ops 1, 2, 3 sticks, 4 sticks.
Wait, hold on. So it's not IV?
No, it's 4 eyes.
4 eyes.
It's
I.
Black Ops I.
Yeah.
Black Ops I.
Yeah.
Is coming to all of you hopefully really soon. That's gonna be great.
Yo, that is a that's a hashtag Stay Dumb.
Oh my god. So it looks like. I broke myself.
Call of Duty, stay dumb.
Call of Duty, hashtag stay dumb.
Yeah.
Wow.
Call of Duty, I will be out at some point. Actually, October 26th, it seems.
Yep.
From the way that things got shared out today from Kotaku. Which is going to be really cool to see how that plays itself out. I don't know. Let's see. Did they say Rockstar's Red Dead Redemption? Okay. Rockstar's Red Dead Redemption will be out October 26th. It looks like Call of Duty will be out the 12th. So that's going to be really interesting because those two big games are going to be going up against each other in the same month with a lot of competition between the two. I'm curious to know what are your thoughts about Call of Duty coming back out, and then we'll talk about The Division because I think there's a lot of other stuff going on with that particular game, especially. So, Tanya, I want to go to you first. What are your thoughts about, I'm not going to say it, Call of Duty 4, Black Ops 4 coming out?
You mean Call of Duty Black Ops IV like it should have been called?
I'm just saying, but I wonder if they were like, no, that's too medical.
Exactly. It's too medical. But they wanted that emotion, that raw emotion.
Is it going to be like... Man. Medpack motherfucker, like what's going on?
It could be.
I got COD Black Ops 3 and I barely played it, so I'm not super excited for it. I'm like, yeah. All right, cool, it's coming out, and this stupid use of 4 Roman numeral I really bothers me. So my inner nerd and a Latin student is bothered to the point I'm not getting this game. So unless Ubisoft wants to give it to me for free, I can't in good conscience give them money for this misuse of Roman numerals.
It always comes back to math. It always comes back to language. It's like, Reef, save us. Save us, Reef. What do you think about Call of Duty Black Ops 4?
I mean, I think that it's... I mean, I really don't know where they're going to go with it, to be honest. I mean, Black Ops kind of started off as this, like, you know, Cold War... Vietnam spy era take, like Call of Duty, and then it just became, mm-hmm. Hey, we're all the way in the future, you know, and then they kept going in the future, and then they brought it back again with World War II. I know those are different devs, but I kind of like, unless they're bringing this back to sort of that spy and decision making and that kind of like, you don't know what's going to happen next, which I kind of felt in Black Ops 1 and 2, really.
Yeah.
I'm not really interested unless they bring it back to that, because I can't believe they're going to make another future one, especially after, you know, Advanced Warfare. Infinite Warfare. it's even hard to remember the freaking names of them. I think that unless they're really going back for that, maybe even get like Ice Cube back in as Bowman, you know what I'm saying?
Oh shit. I totally forgot about that.
Yeah,
wow.
Which and I know we have this as a topic later, but which I saw a scene of in the video that was screened at the White House, violent video games. They had a scene of Ice Cube getting killed in brutal fashion by Viet Cong. I mean, it's a Call of Duty game, and you know, generally I'm not interested unless they do that kind of actually interesting gameplay and plot lines to me. So
yeah, I'm a little disappointed that they didn't call it Black Ops
That would have been the next
lot, that would have made a lot of sense.
That's
that
would have
made a lot of sense if they were going to go with the version of that game. But I'm sad. Well, here's the thing too, is I'm excited for the fact that that game is going to be in the future again. Like I know that there's a lot of people who are just like, where is it going to go? I feel less about that with the Call of Duty game than I do with the other game that got kind of teased out, or at least like the information got broken about Battlefield 5, I think it is. I think that also got leaked out this week. I think. I know that there was a new Battlefield. I just don't know if it was 4 or 5. I think it was probably 5. The interesting part about that one is that they're going to go back to World War II again. And that upsets me more than Black Ops staying in the future. Because I want that series to go into the future. I want them to do new 2042 version of that game, because I think that one is something that we've missed in that genre, on that IP, with that kind of game. I want them to do Battlefield in the future, but they're just not going to do it. What are your thoughts about Battlefield in the future, Reef?
I mean, again, if it's like way in the future, like 2042, I might be a little more interested in it. If it's like in the future, like just Call of Duty, but with drones and stuff, little less interested. Because Battlefield 4 tried a little bit of that. Because like that's back when they were really just trying to play catch up with Call of Duty. And I don't think it worked too well. So yeah, I'm kind of the opposite. Like I want less of the future stuff and like more of the just, you can make interesting stories involving like militaries and war, and you don't have to have all this kind of like future tech stuff. But I understand that that's kind of the flashy stuff that you can put on the cover or talk about in the interviews and stuff. And it's harder to communicate like the nuances of like a personal story about, you know, about war. But that's what I really want from these games, especially if they're going to release them every year. I mean, I'm like, yo.
Yeah.
You know, so
it is hard to keep pushing that stuff out. Tanya, what are your thoughts about future Battlefield stuff?
I'm not really feeling Battlefield in the future or in World War II. I mean, I'm kind of oversaturated with World War II games.
Yeah, me too.
Like Shree said, you can make a good game about war and about soldiering. I wish it was more things like, what was the game that made you think about war?
Spec Ops The Line.
Yes. Yeah, I think it's Spec Ops. Yeah.
I would love more games like Spec Ops The Line.
Yeah.
I would love more games, you know, heartbreaking as it was to play. The one where you are playing as part of the Serbian conflict. And I am losing all of my names today, but it's but you know, it's one that's very heartbreaking and you have to think about things and your character can have an emotional breakdown.
Right.
I want games like that really make people think about what war is like and not just I get to go shoot a bunch of people that may or may not look like me, so let's go do that for fun. Cause I think it's hard because especially the conversation that's going on now and that we'll talk about a little later, because games like that, when they are churned out year after year and people play them, there's no consequence, there's no emotional message or lesson to be learned. And I'm never, ever going to say that games cause violence, but the army does use these games to train people. Right, you know, there's all these simulators, things like that. And there needs to be a balance of we learn about war, we learn the cost of war, we see what it does to casualties, to villages, to people that are left behind, versus the guts and glory, be a soldier, save your country, be an uber patriot, and nothing is ever wrong. Because I don't know how many people know this, I had signed up to go in the military, but they didn't take me, because back then they rejected you for flat feet, they rejected you for other things. I could have been one of these people like out in the Gulf War or anything else. So I think war games and shooting games and about the military can be there, but they should be mindful. And it should make people think about the people that you are then shooting. Because, you know, like Spec Ops Line broke my heart. And it really made me think about the people that are on the other end of that gun.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I was talking about this the other day on Twitter, especially because someone was talking about war and something else and some conflict. And I was like, I'm super weary and not a fan of patriotism or the military services. I just have never felt like it was a thing that was worth people doing, especially when we have a lot of the conflicts that we've had since World War II. That have been kind of conflicts of what's the word that I was looking for? We haven't needed to go into many of those wars. They've been ones that we've just decided that we needed to go and go fuck with other people with. Mm-hmm. And when that then plays itself out in the games that we play, it makes me not want to necessarily engage with them, but I weirdly love war stories and war movies and things like that.
Yeah.
It makes me really want a military game. If you're going to do another military game, I would love to see a conflict story about the Vietnam War if you were going to do a game. And they've backed off that numerous times. where they've tried to talk about, you know, wars of convenience in ways that they've tried to kind of poke those things into stories about war, but they've never really gone full-fledged into it, which I would love to see them do.
Yep.
I think it would be really smart and be really cool if they actually messed around with that stuff. But in terms of Battlefield itself, I want to see if you're going to do that game in the future. The only real reason I want you to do it in the future is because I feel like that pushes the technological boundaries a little bit forward. And lets us see stuff that these consoles and these PCs will be able to do technologically in a way differently than you would with kind of World War II tech and other stuff like that, which is especially interesting when you talk about games like The Division, where they had this kind of in-between space where they were like kind of doing future tech stuff with drones and remote-controlled mines and things like that. And it was interesting when they first dropped the first E3 trailer. They had this really interesting UI aspect to the game and a lot of ideas about what firefights and what technology would do in the battlefield. I want to see what they're going to do with Division 2, which just got kind of teased as being something that is going to drop at E3 from Ubisoft. I know I played a little bit of it. Actually, I played a lot of Division, the first game.
Yeah.
Tanya, did you get a chance to play that game?
Oh, yeah. Got it both on PS4 and PC.
Yeah, what were your thoughts about the first Division game?
It was good. It took a while to draw me in, and when the newest update dropped, I really, really got back into it. I know there was conversation around kind of the way your enemies were dressed. A lot of people took the way that they were dressed to be kind of urban thug. And I was like, no, they're just cold. And they must have like there's snow.
Urban cold.
Right, but it's like, but they also take like 20 bullets to go down for like a equal equivalent level henchman. So, because one of my friends was really concerned. It was like, are they playing on the trope of the urban youth and the gang member? And I was like, nah, they're just cold. Like, I'm cold looking at my character. And, you know, it was good. It's challenging. And I can go in either by myself or with buddies. Malavent in the chat and I have played quite a bit. Nick and I have played a bit, and I like the game, and the 1.8 improvements really, really brought it around for me. So now I'm like, I need to go back and really dive into this before the second game comes out.
Yeah. Reef, what are your thoughts about The Division? I know you played a good amount.
So The Division is my top played Steam game of all time.
Really?
I played a lot of The Division.
I did not know that.
Yeah, I mean, I think I had like over 250 hours in The Division.
Damn.
I really, really loved that game. You know, I'm one of those people that played it throughout the sort of times when people thought it was dead. Like, I still thought that it was a fun game that I would dip in every once in a while. And honestly, what kept me in is that, you know, for a while now, they've had a very frequent podcast where they talk about the game and they talk about the issues with the game. At first, it was just Amish, the community manager, but then he started bringing on devs and narrative people and like all that stuff. So I really felt like I was involved with the game, and that made me more likely to dive in.
Yeah.
What was it?
No, keep going.
Yeah, so like I really like it. When they announced The Division 2 at first, I kind of felt the same way when I heard Destiny 2 was announced, which was a bit of a letdown because I was like, can't y'all just keep building on this game? but like I listened to, so like they dropped another Division podcast today and they basically said like, look, the main reason that we're making part 2 is because the engine that we're working off of for part 1 is years and years old, and we can't make engine changes to a game. Like, you can't patch the engine, you know? So, like, the only way to really get the, like, increased physics and the fidelity and the realism that they want is to go to a new engine, which would mean, like, a whole new game. And, like, I was like, that makes sense, you know? I don't feel like that was the same thing in Destiny because it doesn't look or feel that different from the first one. But at least from what they're saying, this one is going to be almost structurally different from the Division 1. And I think that the way that it's grown and the way that Massive has really listened to like the customers and kept updating it, even though everybody was making fun of the game because it because they were like, oh yeah, it's not as big as Destiny, and they just kept on going despite all that, and then made a game where by the 1.8, everybody was like, hey, this is actually pretty good now, you know. So I'm hoping that they take those lessons into part two, and I really hope that they learn from the Destiny 2 experience and not try to overcorrect on a lot of the mistakes, like build on the good stuff and make small tweaks, because otherwise you can have a bit of a mess on your hands. But I'm excited for it.
Yeah, I played a bunch of it from the beginning when it first dropped, and I was a little bit disappointed, like I think most people were in the first like 6 months of that game coming out, because it was super buggy. First of all, they had the whole like the game got downgraded from what we saw in the E3 trailer, and that was like a huge hullabaloo of that first, which was like super bugged out to see everyone like freak out about that part. Because it did look vastly different than what they advertised in the beginning of that trailer and that first trailer, which I don't know why people didn't understand that was not going to be exactly what it looked like. But I'm actually excited for this second version of the game because, one, I always feel like most sequels do well by the series that they've started with and they get better. Two, I'm kind of hoping and I'm happy to hear you talk about the kind of engine changes, because maybe they will be able to actually hit some of the fidelity stuff that they were talking about and showed in that first trailer, now that they have new tech to work on, they've had some years to learn about, you know, optimization, and they've also got new actual just like physical tech to work with new graphics cards kind of pushing everything out and being able to kind of do that stuff. So I wonder if the new game that we're going to get is going to be as pretty as what they promised in their first E3 trailer that happened like almost 6 years ago. Not 6 years, how long has it been? Like 3 years that game's been out?
Yeah.
Like 3 years ago or something to that effect. So it feels like Ubisoft has like this stable of games that have all been called dead, and then they've come back and people have given them some love because of all the support that the teams have given them, which is kind of cool. It's like super dope to see like games get that from the dead treatment and then come back and still kick ass.
Yeah, so. I mean, it just proves that your game does not have to be number one to be successful. Like, it's not always a race to the top.
Yeah, it's cool. I'm happy they did that. That's like, what is it? Rainbow Six came out of the blue again and came back. Division came back and did that. The only game that I feel like didn't make that transition was For Honor. I feel like that one, people kind of jumped into it and then didn't stay with it because it just didn't do stuff.
Yeah, they had some major, major server issues. And like I dropped out of it and I was real excited. I thought it was a great game, but I just couldn't connect and stay connected. And it was like it's a totally online game. So it was unfortunate.
Real quick before we transition to the next topic, did either one of you play the Dark Zone stuff?
A little bit. I wasn't a real big fan of it, and I haven't gone back to the Dark Zone since the last big update, mostly because I kept finding griefers.
Yes.
Yep. And it's just like, could I even get in the Dark Zone like 10 feet before you shoot my ass off looking for a med pack? Like I hadn't set a foot out of the gate and I'd be dead. And I'm like, well, that wasn't fun.
Reef, did you play any Dead Zone stuff?
I did. I did. I played quite a bit of the Dark Zone, including including the like expand. You know, when they expanded it with the latest update. I played a lot more of the incursions, which were kind of like their version of sort of their end game, sort of not quite raids, but they're like hardest content, which I found was like always great. And yeah, I thought that the Dark Zone was cool, but it kind of. When the game originally came out, I thought that the game really needed to sort of live or die by the Dark Zone. Mm-hmm. And my experience changed a bit because I feel like the changes that they made to the overall world and the other things that they added, like the incursion and the underground mode and my favorite, the survival mode, and like the 4v4, like the PvP stuff, they added a lot of extra stuff so that the Dark Zone became... It was cool if you wanted it, but it wasn't like the only multiplayer content that you kind of needed to like keep people that finished all the single player stuff. So like I ended up playing it less and less because of that, because, you know, of like griefers and the fact that, you know, there's just a lot of high level people there, right? So yeah, I mean, I played it, but I don't think that the game sort of like lives or dies by it like I originally thought.
Yeah, I'm hoping that they fix some of that stuff I'm hoping that they learned a lot from the way that kind of played out, because it turned me off to playing in the Dark Zone a lot. I was like, this is like black people versus NYPD mode. For real. You just walk in there and you just get shot. I'm like, God damn, this is terrible.
Wow.
Yeah, it was not my favorite version of the game. Yeah, I said that. Hashtag Black Ops IEEE. Anyway.
Wow. Okay then.
Besides that, I'm gonna switch modes and switch over to the other story that we have today. If you have not heard, our wonderful president number 45, Donald J. Trump, or as I like to call him, hashtag WAT on online, WAT. You'll see me tweet that out a lot, which stands for Whack Ass Trump. He had some folks over from the gaming industry over to the White House today, as of Thursday when we're recording, after sparking a whole bunch of controversy by talking about how possibly video games are causing or helping to push forward some of the school shootings that we've had by showing children violence and having them play violent games over their lifetimes and over the times they've been in front of this kind of media. It seems like they're kind of rehashing the Jack Thompson conversation that they had in the early 90s that came across with, you know, Mortal Kombat and all the other things. But the interesting part today was that no one knew who the folks were that they were going to have at the White House to talk to Mr. Trump about all this stuff. And a list of folks came out today, which is really interesting. So I'm just going to read it off really quick. Senator Marco Drinkwater Rubio, Representative Vicky Hartzler, Representative Martha Roby from Alabama, Strauss Zelnick, who is the CEO of Take-Two Interactive, CEO, Brent Bozell, who's from the Media Research Center, Lieutenant Colonel Dave Grossman, who wrote a book called Assassination Generation, which is an interesting book if you had a chance to read it, because it's kind of full of shit. Pat Vance, President of the ESRB. Matt Gallagher, president and CEO of the ESA, Robert Altman, chairman and CEO of ZeniMax, which is the company that runs Bethesda, or they are part of Bethesda, Melissa Henson from the Parents Teacher Council. So interestingly enough, Brent Bozell, two of the folks who are in that grouping, are really interesting for specific reasons. So Brent Bozell for the Media Research Center and Melissa Henson from the Parents Television Council. The Parents Television Council was something that was created by Brent Bozell. So it's like, if you have you have two people on that council, they actually have three. You have Lieutenant Grossman, Brent Bozell, and Melissa Henson, who are on the, if you're thinking about the two sides of this, it would be, you know, all the folks who are on the gaming side and all the people who are like supposed to be the experts about why violence is bad. And two of them, one of them called President Obama a skinny crackhead, and the other one, Melissa Henson, works for the first guy who said the thing about the crackhead stuff.
So hold on.
Uh-huh.
There's a collusion, conflict of interest. Mm-hmm. Wow. And we do have an attorney in the chat.
Yes, we do. Yes, we do.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'm just...
It's really interesting. So, like, you have all these factions, right? And there was a good piece about it. I don't remember which outlet it was on. It might have been on Kotaku who talked about it. But the sad part about this whole conversation was, at least from the standpoint of that article, was that in this situation where you have the president's ear, you have the folks who are in the gaming industry who are going to be talking about and kind of pitching for their own side, which is making a shit ton of money, making hand over fist dough. So they have their own ulterior motives to have in this conversation. And then you also have the folks on the other side who are kind of batshit, who also aren't really folks of measure when it comes to like bringing actual facts to the table. So then you have the middle where there are the people who are worried about people getting shot with guns and gun control who are like, so where do we sit at this part of the table? So I want to throw it to both of you. I want to go to Reef first. Hearing all the conversations about, you know, how violence is kind of perpetuated in video games and seeing, you know, how Trump has now thrown himself into this conversation. What are your thoughts about, you know, the overarching narrative?
I think the narrative is bad. I think it obscures a nuanced conversation that we could really be having about, you know, violence as a, you know, kind of easy plot device in video games, movies, books, TV shows. Like, it's definitely been a thing in American history in general that a lot of the most popular stuff tends to be that kind of work. I think that's a worthy conversation to have with video game like developers as well. But I don't think that it's worthy when you, first of all, the only people that you invite are people from Take-Two and Bethesda. So that's not, I feel, representative of the industry as a whole. So I don't right. think you get like a balanced viewpoint. Mm-hmm. And like all the articles that like I saw right in the headlines, like Trump meets with makers of Doom and Grand Theft Auto, you know, like that's how this thing was like advertised and like thrown out. And they and they screened this like minute and a half long video, which is on the White House's YouTube channel. So like you can watch it, called Violence in the Video Games, where they do nothing but show like violent scenes from like Dead by Daylight and Call of Duty and like that kind of stuff. And it's just
on your face.
and like I'm like, first of all, I hope the ESRB person said, well, these are all mature rated games that kids shouldn't be playing. So I want to know what their conversation is. Is their conversation that, you know, these games are rated appropriately, let's talk about ways to keep kids away from them, which again, we have parental controls on all the hardware and all that stuff. So, you know, if a parent really wants their kids not to play it, we have the functionality available. But I find it especially tricky that they're having this right after the school shootings, as if this is one of the administration's response to like, we're looking into violence, so we're going to call all the video game people, you know?
Right.
That's
right,
what I don't right. like about is the timing and like when this occurs. And like Trump even mentioned like his son Barron, like, and he basically said, like, yeah, like, you know, I would be shocked that he has access to this stuff. And I'm like, well, put the damn parent controls on your console, man.
You know, can't do that when you're out there having affairs.
You know, yes. Look, man, tell Stormy Daniels to log on to the Xbox and turn the parental controls on. You know what I'm saying? I mean, come on, come on.
I hope she does it with her feet.
But I mean, yeah. So like, I hate this stuff because it does, as I said, it like hides a conversation that we can and should be having. But right. we can't, because these kind of things, they make everybody defensive. Obviously, all the video game people are going to be super defensive, and like all the other people are going to be super offensive. So it's like nothing is going to come out of this, in my opinion.
Tanya, what are your thoughts about Trump Ooh. versus video game violence, violence, violence?
I'm going to use all our allocation for F-bombs for the rest of the year, probably. Okay. First of all, fuck Trump, because he doesn't know what video games are. Fuck him for not knowing that the rating system already exists. Fuck everybody that went to that meeting from the game industry, because they should have said, go read some statistics, you dumb fuck. And three or four, I've lost count because I'm mad. there is no, I mean, it's like people, everyone forgot basic stats of there is no causation and correlation. They can't sit here and go, oh, all these violent video games, because I grew up with Mortal Kombat. A lot of us grew up with all these violent-ass games. We grew up with Looney Tunes. We ain't shot nobody. Mm. But yet, Look at the people at Columbine. Their parents weren't fucking parenting them. Let's just look at the real issue. You let people go to Walmart and buy a fucking gun, but a black dude is in there with a cosplay gun and you shoot him. Let's look at the issues of, I can order fucking ammo online. I can go in any hunting goods store. But, oh no, we can't blame actual guns because of someone brought up in the chat. He's in the NRA's pocket. They fucking own him. They own a lot of those people. So, instead of actually pulling back and going, there's already a rating system for games. The game industry has been around for over 30 years. Just like rock and roll, rap music, everything else that gets blamed when there's a violent action. Nobody wants to look at the fact that we can too easily get guns in this country. People don't parent their fucking kids. And everyone wants to blame everything except the NRA. I mean, the NRA is acting like there's some holy war against them. We saw people at church with their fucking guns acting persecuted.
Oh, yeah.
And I just looked at that. I was like, okay, I gave up Christianity a long time ago for reasons. But you all are worshiping at the altar of guns. We don't have to go hunt our own food anymore. There's grocery stores. It's not like we live in this society where I gotta shoot wolves off my fucking property. Like, why are people out here acting like, oh, you need a gun? Because most people, and I forget who I saw share this, that gun deaths go down when the NRA has their gatherings.
Mm-hmm.
It's these fucking gun nuts that act like you're taking away everything. I mean, you saw how they were when Obama campaigned, acting like he was going to take away everybody's guns. You don't need an assault rifle in the city. You don't need an assault rifle to keep your home safe. If you live in a place where you need a fucking assault rifle, maybe you should move. I'm just saying, I live in Chicago. Everybody acts like Chicago's fucking Wild West. I don't have an assault rifle. I don't even have a pistol. Granted, that's also because I'm scared of guns because of past experiences. But no one should feel the need to need an AR-15 or any of this other stuff. And if somebody has a history of, I'm going to be violent, I'm going to shoot somebody, I'm going to do whatever because you're rejected or whatever your issue is, why aren't we looking at that stuff? Why aren't we looking at the indoctrination of these angry white dudes? And yeah, I said it. If you're white watching this, I don't give a fuck. Everybody talk about radicalization of Muslims and all this other shit. What about these white dudes that are out here in their cults acting like nobody wants them because they're smarter or whatever the fuck term they're using this week? No, nobody wants you because you're an asshole. But yet they indoctrinate themselves in this idea that they're just so above everyone else, and if people don't want them, it's their fault. So a girl rejects me, I'm just going to go shoot up school. And no one takes these things seriously. They don't look at the markers of what it is that makes someone go out and do this. And I'm not even talking about mental health issues, because where people are also real quick to go, oh, people are crazy. No, some motherfuckers are just, man, they got easy access to a gun. And sometimes it's their parents' gun. It's not even a gun they went out and bought. It's their parents got guns around the house. They know where it is. They took it and they went and shot folks. But yet we saw how people reacted to the most recent shooting. They are giving death threats to students that survived a horrific event.
Mm.
So it's not bad enough that they went to school and some people didn't go home that day, but folks are so invested in keeping their fucking guns for whatever reason that they cannot understand that these kids survived a horrific thing. They're forever scarred and forever changed.
Yeah.
And now that they're out here going, hey, you know what? I'm 18. I can vote. Now they're scared. So good. Fuck them. Fuck
the interesting
Trump.
Part, you got any more fucks in there?
That's it.
Let's see. How many can I get in there before we take a break?
Like you had a machine gun of fucks.
I have.
The NRA of fucks would love you.
I mean, the ring is too small to show, but I do have a ring that says zero fucks.
That's amazing.
But, because we all grew up with games. Ain't none of us gone out and shot nobody? What the fuck?
The interesting part I find about all this stuff is like, and we're not gonna dig into the conversation about the Second Amendment, even though we should at some point. We'll probably do that on Beltway at some point. I want to get someone, and if you're in the chat or if you're listening to the show, if you have any folks who are like experts about, you know, gun stats and all that stuff, send them to me, please, because I want to have them on Beltway at some point. But the thing that I was always tweeting about when it comes to this part of the conversation is, like what Tanya said, is there's definitely this space where people feel like everything else is the reason besides the actual thing. But people are like, well, guns don't shoot anybody. I was like, yeah, but you got to at some point look at the way that the society has been built from the beginning. It's not like this is a thing that's happened just in the past 20 years, which are people like, well, there's an upscale in school shootings and stuff. This country has been built on violence. This is a violent culture that we live in. Humans themselves are just violent beings innate to themselves in a lot of ways. It's a part of the human condition that violence is a part of it. But also, at some point, you have to take away the tools. Like, the tools are the thing that is the dangerous part of this equation right now. People are like, yo, what if you took away the people's guns and gave them knives? I was like, yeah, it's going to take a really long time for you to stab through 75 people. Hopefully somebody knocks you the fuck out before you get to the other people to stab.
Hold on, wait. I keep swords and swords and knives. Yeah. It's going to take a long time to stab one person. Do you know how I'm long saying. It takes to die from a stab wound?
I'm saying, but that's the reason why the conversation gets all messed up, right? Where it's like, people don't want to recognize that there is, like, the whole conversation is one about selfishness, and it's about privilege, and it's about the idea of what you as a human being are allowed to have, which in and of itself is a very American thing. People don't like to think about the American culture in and of itself, of like, the American culture is very selfish. It's very me-centered, where it's like, if I can't have a thing, it's wrong that I can't have it. Why can I not have it? And then you break that down into race and gender and to all the other things, and it splits itself off even more. Like, I, as a Black American, Black male American, feel very much so that there are things that are just not things are not for me, because I am not allowed to have those things. Like, I don't think I should have a gun. I would never advocate for Black people to have concealed carry licenses, because we all know how the scenario happens when you don't have a gun. So, like, if you had a gun going into scenarios, you were probably not going to be the person who's going to be looked at as the good person in that scenario. So why would you put yourself into those scenarios?
Look at Dylann Roof. They put his ass in a vest and gave him Burger King.
Right. And it's interesting because it breaks down into a whole bunch of other conversations about, like, how do you deal with that as a person of society? How do you think about that in terms of the video game systems that we're talking about? And how does media actually affect the people that consume them? There's a lot of conversations that need to happen in there that are really, really important. And I don't think that Trump is the person to have these conversations.
No, absolutely Trump, not.
No. Trump shouldn't talk to himself. Because he'd probably get 10 different answers.
He's probably the one who designed the damn Black Ops damn logo. He was like, yeah, that makes sense. It's four eyes in it, right? It's four eyes.
But at the end of the day, though, it's all about scapegoating. Because instead, they're deflecting away from the NRA, who wants guns to be for profit. They want this to continue to be an industry that lets people profit off the fear that they need a gun. Because I'm guessing a lot of people that have been convinced they need guns don't need them. Now, if you live in the country and you may have to keep animals off your farm, or if you actually are in some place where you do still need to hunt, cool, but you still don't need a fucking assault weapon to go hunting.
Yes. Yep. It's not about need. It's about constitutional rights. Like, people think taking that away is as bad as taking away free speech or taking away right to assembly or that's kind of where the conversation, when I've talked to people about it and like when I've read about, you know, sort of the NRA stuff, and that's what it comes down to is, you know, it is in the Constitution and people value that as high as everything else in the Constitution, you know, and it's an argument that you can never win because people will just say, well, it's a slippery slope. You know, if you take away my AR-15, pretty soon, like, we won't be able to assemble, or we won't be able to have free speech, or we won't, you know, or like, we might.
That's so funny, man.
I mean, we might put that 3/5 back in there. Who knows? You know,
I mean, but by the way it looks, it was God given that you were supposed to have a weapon. But for all the four people who are hosts on this podcast, it's like a goddamn amendment for us to have rights.
I know,
that's right? Fucked up.
Yeah.
Fucked up. And on that note.
No, I actually, it took two. It took a few of them, really.
Yeah, it took a few of them. Right. Yeah. And then it took, you know, societal intervention. It took marches. It took all that other shit for us to hopefully not get shot when we go to the store. Yeah. So with that said, we're going to take a quick 3-minute break, hang out, listen to some music, buy some merch while you're on the break. Get some water. Lick at my hands. Go tell people how Roman numerals work. We'll be right back.
What's good, Internet? This is Austin Walker, a.k.a. Professor Killer, a.k.a. David Foster Flawless, a.k.a. Bars Von Trier. You already know what it is. And since you do, you should also already know that Spawn on Me keeps it real when it comes to games, culture, and holding it down even when the world is on fire. Welcome to Chicago, y'all.
What's everybody? That's not even a sentence.
Wow, did you start drinking during the break? What the hell?
Sadate on the tippy tie. I don't know words. I'm a Trump advocate. Wow. Welcome back. Oh, welcome back to episode 211 of the Spawn on Me podcast. Thank you for hanging out during the break. Thank you so much for chilling with us in the Twitch land, in the podcast land, in all the lands that matter in Chicago. We love you all. We have a couple quick things before we get up out of here. We've been playing a whole bunch of stuff, going through a whole bunch of games. I know that we had a chance to play some Far Cry, which we're going to talk about after what we've been playing. But Reef, I know you had some stuff that you had in your pocket that you've been messing around with and playing on the Switch and on the go. What have you been rocking so far?
Yeah, so I recently finished a game called Dandara. Which is pretty much available on every console and every mobile device and like things like the Apple TV. So it's literally everywhere. Really cool game based on a Afro-Brazilian character that helped rescue slaves in Brazil. She's a bit of a myth, I guess, so they're not really sure as to, you know, what's true and what's not. But like she was like also really proficient with capoeira, with like, you know, dance fighting, as I call it. In the game, you know, it like focuses on like her fighting against this like oppressive city. And the cool thing about it is like you can't walk. You can like only jump from like a surface to surface. So it's really a game about dodging and evading and striking when the time is right, which I definitely fits like the theme of like capoeira. Really hard game. It's a Metroidvania. So you're constantly going back to areas to unlock things and getting new powers and like going back and forth. Fairly difficult. Took me about 8 hours to beat, but I would say maybe 3 of those hours was spent like trying to figure out how to get to like the last level, which like you can see, but it's kind of hard to figure out actually how to get there. But I would definitely advise you to check out this game because it's on so many different things. Not for everybody because it is very hard and they don't give you a lot to work off of. It's like definitely very old school in that mentality, but really, really dope. Also played the demo of Kirby Star Allies on the Switch as well. I'm typically not a Kirby person. It was never a game series that really got me. Even though I love platformers in general, but like Kirby always seemed, I don't really know how to explain it. It just never really did it for me. But Star Allies seems like it's a pretty fun co-op experience. I mean, it's a pretty standard Kirby game, like you suck up ghosts and you gain their powers, but they added this like additional thing where you can basically make certain enemies into your friend, so like they fight for you. So it's this cool thing where like you can build up like this custom team and like swap people on the go, like depending on their abilities. Kind of reminded me a bit of the old Blizzard game, like the Lost Vikings, which was like a 16-bit game.
Oh yeah, I remember
where
that. Mm-hmm.
Where you constantly had to change people, kind of like Lemmings as well. It was pretty fun. Don't know if I'm gonna spend $60 on it, but I did enjoy it a lot. Also played a bit Layers of Fear, which is a horror game. I heard a lot about this one. It's not a series that I've really been into, but really good. You know, I've only played it for a little bit, but I did play it at night under the covers to let so that I could get in the mood. And it scared the shit out of me, y'all. I mean it definitely goes off with jump scares and like that kind of stuff, but I enjoyed it, and I'm definitely looking to jump some more into it. And finally, I continued to go through the Assassin's Creed Origins Discovery mode. I think it's gotten to the point where I would recommend this to people that do not have the game, because you can buy it on PC as a standalone for $20. At first, I was like, I don't know if I'd recommend this to like somebody that isn't familiar with the game, but it's really good. They put a lot of effort into this. And I think it can be a great teaching tool, and like I should plan on using some of it in the class that I'm teaching. So definitely advise you guys to check out the Discovery mode. It has a lot of content.
That's badass. Tanya, what have you been up to?
Let's see. I played Wolverblade by Darkwind Media, because they talked to, what made me want to play it was someone like tweeted them about how it wasn't realistic to have brown people, and they were like, okay, whatever, we've done our research. And I was like, you get my money. And they actually reached out, and I already bought the game, but then they were like, hey, do you want some codes to give away? So I played it on stream. It's really cool, and it feeds that I need chaos and mayhem feel, because I literally just played as a picked warrior just mowing down people. It was beautiful.
Yeah,
I loved it. So I've got it on Steam, and it's great. Let's see. I've gone back to The Sims 4. Because Sims, why not? And then today on stream, I played Lee's Reigns, Her Majesty.
Nice. Yes.
I apparently am very much a heathen and a heretic. I died being burned at the stake so many times.
I'm sure Lee loves you for it, too.
Because I was just sitting there like, but there were times where it's like, you're a heathen. And I was like, what? What did I do? And I'm like, just because I wouldn't like give you all the money in the treasury, you creepy pastor. And just like my best reign was 20 years.
That's actually nice. Pretty good.
That's really
20
good.
Years is pretty good.
I was
good.
Just like, okay, I'll take it.
I think
then
I got
one.
Yeah, I rarely get into the 20s. Rarely.
And the double
That's
digits.
Badass.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So I can usually get to like the teens, but like 20 is tough.
I don't know what I did, but then like I got the king, then he started doing, you've made us great and prosperous. I need to protect you. And then I got locked away in a tower like fucking Rapunzel until I couldn't talk anymore. And I was just like, that's not what I expected to happen. And then a couple times the people loved me so much, they literally trampled me to death trying to like,
yeah,
adore me. And I was like, this is a little too real, like in a metaphorical sense of how people act online. And I was like, ooh, I'm gonna be in this corner, I'm gonna be away. And like the chick that wanted to borrow my husband's stamp, and I'm like, what's going on here? So I'll definitely be playing that again. I did pretty good, but it was just like I kept saying I'm gonna stop, and it was like one more, then one more. So Lee, and it's like if you know anything about Lee's writing and the way that she speaks, I'm like, that's all Lee right there.
Absolutely. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yep.
Let's see, what else have I been playing? I think that's it, because I was away at Emerald City Comic Con for a week, so it feels like I've been gone forever, but I was only gone for 4 days.
You have been traveling your behind off. You have been all around the world. Aye.
Yeah, so this is the most you're going to see of me for the next month, because Khalif and I both go to GDC next week.
We'll be there, hanging out, getting stuff done, making things happen.
Yeah.
Anything else on your playlist?
On my want to play... Oh, wait, I forgot one other game, and it wasn't really recent, but Speed Dating for Ghosts.
Oh, yeah, I did
see
it.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, how was that?
Oh, my God, it's so much fun, because I am not a dating game person normally. Mm-hmm. I played Dream Daddy, because a friend was like, I really want to see it, but she's not into streaming. She's not really a gamer. And didn't have time to really play it. And I was like, it's $15. If you get it, I'll stream it. I will satisfy your curiosity. And, I did not expect to feel deep feelings for some fucking ghosts. But, like, so you have three rooms. It's literally speed dating for ghosts, and you're a ghost. I won't tell you when you meet them, but there's one ghost that doesn't realize they're a ghost. Ooh. And you feel
it's like Sixth Sense.
Kind of like they have this existential moment. You can kind of tell them, you cannot tell them. And if you tell them they're a ghost, they have this kind of existential, oh shit moment. And there's another ghost that reminds me of the painting Scream. And it's very easy to frighten this ghost off, but if you actually manage to work with this ghost, you find out how they died and get them to heal, because they know that they're dead, but they're emotionally compromised from the way in which both they became a ghost and what they did to wind up, like, the way they wound up dead is tied a lot into why they're like this in the afterlife. So it's by Copy Chaser. It is on Steam and itch.io. I highly, highly recommend it. Also with the caveat that, I know some of the developers, and I was a beta tester, but y'all know me well enough to know I'm not going to recommend a game I don't actually like.
Right. True. True that.
And I got into Persona 5. Those people are fucked up.
I've never played Persona. I keep hearing that, though.
Yeah.
So, very quick synopsis, because I haven't got very far, because I finally broke my self-imposed stream embargo on it. You're like a kid that stops someone from doing domestic abuse, and you didn't even really do anything to the dude, but he sues you. But everyone acts like you're this hardened fucking criminal, and remind you as often as they can that you fuck up, you're going to get expelled, you won't have anywhere to go, like your parents ship you off to some other city with this dude who owns a cafe that doesn't really want you there. And I'm like, I stopped a crime. What's going on here? Why does everyone hate me? So you're like this outcast. And I'm just like, oh, okay. I guess that happened. Why are y'all so mean to me? So I was having like emotionally compromised moments, because I'm like, this is reminding me of high school for real. I don't know if I'm okay.
Oh, no. I don't want anything that's going to make me feel like I was back in high school.
I mean, I wasn't a terrible criminal, but it's like, you just stopped a crime from happening. You didn't actually murder anyone, but they act like you done like murdered a gang of people. Like, people whisper about you as you walk by. The teachers are all rude to you. And I'm like, what's going on here?
That just sounds like it's going to make me mad and sad at the same time. I'm like, I don't want people like acting like I did stuff I didn't have to do.
I was just real confused and upset, and I was just like, let me put this shit down for a while. Like, let me go watch a happy cartoon or some shit.
Something. I'm digging through my pile of shame. I finished up Uncharted Lost Legacy, which was fantastic. Definitely check that out and play that if you get a chance. I went through and played some more Absolver. Which I fell off of for a while. It just fell in a really weird space, and then had a lot of server issues the first couple weeks, and they finally got some of it kind of fixed, but it's also like there's kind of no one playing it, which is unfortunate, because that game is still really, really good. I can't recommend picking it up because of that fact, but I think if it goes on a sale, you should definitely check it out and go through the single player, which is fun. It's challenging, and you'll find enough people online who will be able to help you beat bosses and stuff like that when you get a chance to go through it. Went and replayed or restarted Mass Effect Andromeda. Somebody I know, Aaron Freeman, shout out to Aaron Freeman, recommended it and said it wasn't as bad as people said it was.
Yes, definitely.
And I was like, I trust Aaron's judgment, and I trust Reef's judgment on most things. Let me go back and try it out. Went through the character creation, got to my first planet, and fell asleep in the first part of that. So I need to go back. I need to go back and take more time to play it, because I actually want to give that game a chance, because I feel like it got maybe it didn't get the amount of respect that it might have deserved, or at least give it a fair shot. What else? And I started playing more Fortnite because I wanted to get better. I haven't tried the 20 versus 20 limited time mode, which I think is going to be really smart, which they also today said that they're going to also put that game out on mobile. So Fortnite at this point is taking over the world, and it's going to be crossplay, so you'll be able to play with people from console to PC to mobile, which is going to be interesting.
That is nuts.
They are definitely taking over the world. We hope to get those folks on the show soon. And also, the last game I started to play was this game called Hand of Fate 2, which is this really interesting take on a kind of card-based action game. So it's like you're kind of in an arena, and based upon where you travel up these card, lanes. It's like cards are kind of placed on the table, and you can kind of pick which way you want to go across the way that they're formed. And based on that, you can make decisions that have branching paths, and then those branching paths decide how you fight into the arena. Really interesting game. The first one was cool, but I didn't really give it a chance. The second one, I was hoping that they would up the graphics and make it a little bit prettier and run smoother, and it feels like it has in that respect. And I also jumped back into Gwent for some strange reason as well. So I've been jumping around a whole bunch of places that I wanted to see what was happening, and some games I didn't get a chance to play or finish, trying to get things off my pile. There's another game that I saw that looked really weird on stream the other day. It's $2 on the PlayStation Network store, and it's called North. And it looks weird. It's like trippy, and you're like fighting these like faceless monsters. If you've ever seen the movie Jacob's Ladder, and you saw when they did that thing where their faces shook,
yep.
Like the characters look like that, and it's like a bugged out like mid-80s like music video. And I haven't had a chance to like actually go through it yet, because it's supposed to be really short and it's not supposed to be very good, but it looks really interesting. So I want to check that out. And that's kind of all the stuff that I've been actually playing. There's some stuff that I want to get into, but we'll talk about that on another show. But before we go, Tanya and I got a chance to hang out in real life IRL a couple weeks ago. Was it a couple weeks ago at this point? Or was it like last week?
No, time is flying.
A couple weeks ago.
I blinked and February is just gone.
It's gone. February is just gone. It's magic. So we got a chance to hang out in real life. We went and Ubisoft took us down to Hope County, as I put up my air quotes, to go see Far Cry 5 early. If you've had the chance to look at our YouTube videos, we had a couple of interviews with Dan Hay, who's the creative director, and we also had Drew Holmes as well, who's the lead writer. So check that out on our YouTube channel and make sure that you get a chance to see those, because we had some really fun times hanging out and talking about that. Besides the fact that we actually got a chance to go and play the game, go visit and see Ubisoft and play the game early, we got a chance to do some really cool activities as well. Folks who are listening to this, you will not see it until we put up the actual video somewhere else. But folks who are watching the Twitch stream, you might want to see us hanging out where we are hanging out shooting crossbows and shooting slingshots and doing cool stuff like that. I kicked the shit out of a bale of hay.
Yes.
I kicked the shit out of that hay.
You kicked that hay like it owed you money.
Yeah, I kicked that hay like I was a boss, and it was amazing. So again, thank you to Ubisoft for having us down to show us the game. But I wanted to talk really quick with Tanya and just kind of go over like impressions of the day and also impressions of what we got a chance to play, because I want to show after that a little snippet of the Far Cry arcade mode that they just kind of debuted 2 days ago. So go on ahead, Tanya.
I mean, I'm really enjoying it. And y'all know that I have zero filter. Part of what drew me to Mafia 3 was the fact that I got to throw a white dude in the swamp and an alligator ate him. When I saw this game and knew that I could go after the white cultists and people were going to be mad, I was like, just money. Take my money. Like, I don't care if we get a press copy. I'm going to buy that shit again. But, you know, it's done well, you know, and me being silly aside, the voice actor for the father, he nails it. Like, I was sitting there like, maybe he's right. Like, I just had that moment. I'm drawn in, like, maybe I could stay. Maybe he's right. And I was like, wait, he's a little too convincing. Because, I mean, as you know, Danny and Pete, they might have been sucked into Hope County. We haven't seen them since.
That's true.
You saw the photos they posted. We don't know if they're okay or not.
I don't want to see y'all. I don't want to see y'all as like NPCs that like I have to like, shoot in the game. Okay,
that's true.
I mean, although there are people of color. My one gripe, as with all games where this is the case, in character creator there was no natural hair. And it's Ubisoft.
Come on, Ubi.
Made the Division. Can you patch this shit in after release? So that would be my only gripe at the moment. And character creation, I don't know how finished it was when we got to touch it again.
Right.
So there's hope the final version may have more options. But as for what we got to play, that was one thing that was missing. But, you know, I got to recruit a bear to my party.
What?
I got a fucking bear.
That's shout out to Cheeseburger.
Thing, right?
Holy crap. Like you and tamed Boomer, a bear?
You rescue the bear. And the bear's like, cool, you feed me salmon. I'm down to hang with you. Let me take care of these cultists for you, as long as you keep bringing me fish.
Yep.
I hope the bear actually talks like that, too.
The bear is not talking as a bear.
Keep feeding me fish.
I hope the bear's like, picnic baskets or something like that.
Oh, my God. You know what I mean?
Well, it's a part of that game system, the Guns for Hire system that they have in the game.
So there's Guns for Hire, Claws for Hire, and then you can... co-op the whole game.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like, oh, I'm stuck on this one part or I have to co-op one part. You can solo the whole game. You can co-op the whole game. It's like right. If you and your friends are playing and let's say there's a mission I'm really stuck on and Khalif has already done it, can be like, hey, I need help with this mission. And we can just totally co-op it and get through this arcade mode that Khalif's going to talk about more. But overall, you know, even if we didn't get a chance to go to this event and see a lot more, the opening mission will draw you in, I think, because that's what we couldn't capture. That's what we can't talk about. But the opening, that opening entrance into how you wind up in Hope County and you see the charisma of the father for the first time. I think that's going to be the make or break moment for players.
Nice.
If the game doesn't capture you in that moment, I don't know if it will.
Yeah, it was really well. It was fun to kind of pick at, you know, what they did in the kind of media display of the game, what they showed in the advertising, which was like this really bombastic, kind of charismatic dude who's running this cult, and you look at it from the kind of cultural religious experience that they try to give you. And then it breaks down in that first moment where you get to have that first couple of conversations with him. And it definitely brought me in and made me more excited about how they're going to try to do, or at least his character in the game, how they're going to try to portray him. Now, interestingly enough, I've heard from a couple of people who have had a chance to play it. Austin Walker especially wrote a really good piece, a little preview of it. And the conversation that we all had on Spawn on Me about worrying about how the politics of the game is going to play out. Or are they going to kind of hedge a lot and not really go deeply into the kind of systems that they've already kind of set up for everyone? And he's kind of feeling like that might be the case, but it still needs to play it a little bit more. I don't know how it's going to play either in that respect. And I'm hoping all the things that I'm hearing are wrong, that they kind of go into some of it. But there was one mission that we got a chance to play, when we were doing co-op, which was really fun. Co-op was a lot of fun actually. Mm-hmm. Where you kind of run into this, this guy who's running for office, and you go to his porch and you talk to him, and he says something about these Obama libtards, we don't want to do something with them, blah, blah, blah. And then his son, comes out, and you do this mission with his son, and his son says something that, upset people on the internet, basically where he was trying a little bit too hard to kind of be PC and threw around terms, and it didn't seem like it flowed really correctly. It seemed like when Ubisoft put it into the game, it didn't feel like it was given the gravity, or at least given the deference that it deserved. But the mission was still really fun, and I'm hoping that those side characters are the ones that are going to bring that story together, because they did really smart things with the way that you get missions now, which is you go talk to people and that opens up missions. Like, you would do that in real life. So you were like, hey, I need to get to this thing. Where is it? You go talk to a person and that thing comes up on your map, as opposed to going to the towers and then that opening up missions in the map.
Yeah.
It's a lot of fun so far. I'm really excited for it and I want to play more of it. The thing that I'm hoping again is that the story is as strong as the beginning in the way that they're kind of trying to play things out. Tanya, what did you feel about the co-op stuff specifically? Because I know that we got a chance to play a little bit of that. Did you feel like it held up well, or was there stuff in there that you felt was like a little bit off?
Other than the mission we co-op together, where the dialogue seemed a little stilted in places, it was smooth. There wasn't a lot of like, "Where are you? Where are you?" And we were in the same world. We were easy to find, and I didn't feel like there was a lot of, I have to look for you and I've got to run across the map to find you kind of thing. Yeah. Like, the instances were very smooth. And for me, like, I'm more of a solo player when it comes to games like this, mm-hmm. but I know if there's a friend that's maybe behind me and I want to help them out, I can hop in and we can get through stuff. And what I like to, and I know we're talking about co-op, but what I liked about the characters, and I don't know if you noticed this, but you can walk away from characters and they will be like, "Excuse you, I was talking." And then you come back later, they're like, "Oh, now you want to talk to me," which, yeah. You know, it's kind of like that. For me, it felt, and I know I harp on Dragon Age and other stuff, but like Dragon Age had this system where you could end a conversation, but there was no, when you come back, it's like, "Oh, now you want to talk to me." It's kind of like, "Oh, I'm back. Well, let's just pick up where we left off." So the NPCs felt a lot more real in that sense, and they felt like they had agency because they just went about their business whether you talk to them or not. And right. So maybe, what if you piss off the wrong NPC and then they're like, "Oh, you need ammo, fuck you, you walked off."
yep, that stuff was really cool. I did appreciate that a lot. One thing I also did hear that it is a little bit troubling about co-op, and again, you can play the whole game in co-op if you want, which is super cool. I did hear from the folks over at IGN that the problem with that is that the progression is only carried on with the host. Both people don't get the same progression. So that means if you've done a mission with somebody else and seen all the things that have happened, you're going to have to go do that mission again on your own save. Or the other person's going to have to do co-op and you're going to have to be the host, which is kind of whack. I don't really like that part of it. I think that's kind of a really bad, antiquated way to do that. And I'm hoping that they maybe figure out a way to change that, but I don't, it's probably way too late for them to change any of those systems around. But I think that that's the thing that is a little bit of a deterrent for me wanting to play that game co-op, or at least it will be side missions as opposed to the main story missions. If that's the case, I'd maybe not want to invest that time on someone else's save and then get things spoiled for myself like that. But besides the co-op and the main first mission that we got a chance to play, we also got a chance to play some of Far Cry Arcade, which also got announced this week, which is something that is really interesting. And when we were going through the like docket of things that we were going to go see, everybody kind of peeked their head up and they were like, "What the hell is this Far Cry Arcade stuff?" And it's really cool for a lot of different reasons, because one, it's going to be user-generated content, which I didn't know was going to be a thing. So you're going to be able to go into that game, or that mode in particular, and use all the assets that are in Far Cry 5, 4, some of the stuff that's in Assassin's Creed, and I think it's like maybe one other game that you'll be able to do. So you'll be able to build missions, build game types, build multiplayer sessions, build a whole bunch of different things you never thought you'd be able to do inside Far Cry itself, and play them and then share those things out for the rest of the world to play, which is super funky. So like when we did it, the mission, there was like two missions that you could play. The first one was this like funky puzzle where everything was kind of like upside down and turned all around, and you had to like get through the world and just kind of jump through the rooms and get to the end of it. that was all user-generated content from the team. And then there was another one that was kind of more of a shooting gallery, where kind of folks would come through and then attack you, and you would come through and try to get to the end of the mission by killing all the folks who wind up being there that you kind of laid out the plans for where they would be. It seems really, really cool. I do wonder if it's going to be too much for people to handle, which is one of the things that always kind of happens with user-generated content. You always kind of wind up having stuff that is nice in theory, but you're going to have a small amount of people who are the creators, and you're going to have all the other people who are the people who are consuming it. And those things usually don't go well. You've seen that in Little Big Planet and other games like that, where it doesn't work that well, except for like Mario Maker. Mario Maker, that stuff works really well, but it was super cool. I thought that was like a really fun take on how to kind of use Far Cry and build it out and make it fun and do cool stuff with it. And the fact you're going to be able to use assets from multiple games in the Ubisoft kind of world, that's going to be dope. Like, imagine some crazy Far Cry Assassin's Creed mashup. That's going to be dope. Yeah. Yeah. And they're going to keep building out stuff for it, too. They're like, every couple of weeks, they're going to add more content, add more assets and stuff that you'll be able to mess around with and build new worlds and new maps and stuff with. So, super funky stuff. Tanya, what was your thoughts about the arcade stuff?
It was fun, but I got so lost in that first, like, kind of upside down mirror. I was like, what's going on? I keep falling through the floor. And why am I not dead? Because I just landed, like, 4 floors down. And then it was just like, I don't want to do this again. And of course, that was the mission that kept dumping me back into. Yeah. Then I did the other one, the second one we could play. And I was like, this is better. At least I'm outside. Yeah. There's no weird clocks and bookcases.
Yep, but then floating in the air. Killed.
Right. But then I just kept getting killed. But it was fun. You know, it'll be a good diversion. Like, if you get to a mission that's kind of either stressing you out and there's no one to co-op with, or you just want to do something like take a little brain break, I think it'll be good.
Yeah, I think for tinkerers, it'll be a fun mode for people who like to kind of mess around. And I think like anything that gives you a small insight into game development is fun and like a thing that people should try out and check out and mess around with. Reef, yeah. You have any questions about any of the Far Cry 5 stuff?
I mean, the arcade stuff is really what I'm the most curious about. I mean, the rest of it is kind of like, you've already talked about my concerns. Or are they going to nail the story, or is it just going to be window dressing? That's really my main concern with the story mode. The co-op stuff is cool, you know. I like that. I mean, as I said, it's something that I enjoyed about the later Gears and Halo games and stuff. So I'm glad that you can go through co-op. I would hope, even though they probably don't have it, if they had split screen co-op, that would be awesome. Even though I doubt that they probably have that. So like my main thing is on the arcade. Yeah, is like, are they really opening like all of the assets from all of these games? I mean, it just sounds almost too good to be true.
Yeah.
So like, I'd be curious to see what, if any, kind of restrictions that they're going to have on this, because if you're saying I can pull from, you know, Watch Dogs, The Crew, like
I don't think they're going to be opening games. All those up. I think it was like mostly Far Cry's and a little bit of Assassin's Creed.
I'm just saying, you know, I'm
it
like,
would be dope though.
Yeah, like that would be incredible. So yeah, that's what I really have my eyes on. And yeah, I do think that you can have not a small group of creators, but the amount of creators will always be less than the amount of consumers. And as long as they make that stuff easy to share, easy to discover, and not take like a million years to load, I think it can really be a lot more successful than, say, the Doom, like a snap map kind of feature that Bethesda had in the latest Doom. So I'm looking forward to it.
Dope. Yeah, we're about to get up out of here. We hopefully, again, check out the coverage that we had about Far Cry on our YouTube channel. We're going to be playing some of those interviews here on Twitch as well, with the premieres feature that they have here and the VOD stuff here. So we make sure to have that stuff in your notifications so that you'll be able to see that when that goes live and gets replayed. Quick note, again, Tanya and I are going to be in GDC not next week, but the week after that. So we are going to be running around and getting some stuff. Hopefully I'll be recording maybe a couple of things with some folks, doing some cool stuff. I'm going to be co-hosting Kinda Funny's Games Daily Show with Greg Miller on Monday the 19th, which is nuts that that's going to happen during GDC week. So check that out when that happens. We'll be reminding you about that. And again, check out all of our stuff on YouTube. Check out us on Twitter and on Facebook and Instagrams and all that too, because we're going to be doing a lot of photos and behind the scenes stuff with that as well. So again, thank you everybody for coming and hanging out tonight in podcast land, in Twitch land, in all the lands that matter. And we will see you all next week. Peace.